Well, in our interest in getting you guys your money's worth, maximum training, minimum amount of time, we're going to cover a couple of topics during lunch also. The two topics are we're going to do a little more detail on calculating power factor, but not just power factor. You know, what does it do to the voltage level exactly? What does it do to your harmonic level? And then speaking of voltage level, this was always something that was always a bit of a mystery to me, and that was, how do I know what the voltage is going to be on the bus when I turn on a certain load, right? If I start up a motor, what's the voltage going to be? So normally, again, you would plug that kind of information into, an SKM system or an EDSA system or an Easy Power system to actually do the calculation. But how could you do it back of the envelope? Just give me some quick answers. Is this going to be within NEC voltage drop limits, you know, for that size cable, for that length, for that size load, for that size impedance transformer? Just give me some, you know, some numbers. So I drew a quick little diagram up here. I've only got one load. I've got 100 kVA motor, which is like 125 horsepower. And it's being fed from a utility source through a 5 MVA transformer. But I've got paralleled on that same bus a cogeneration system. So I've actually got two sources of power. So I'm trying to make this a little more complicated, but it's still showing you how it's easy to solve. So my first question would be, what is the nominal voltage on bus one, or the one place where I've shown number one? And what's the nominal voltage on bus two, assuming I only have one load? Well, if you look at that, you might say, ooh, this is a little bit hard, you know. Well, I'm going to go through a little shortcut method because we're all about shortcuts here.
Do you have handouts?
Oh, sorry, handouts. Handouts, yes, indeed. Okay. Here we go. Yeah, because this page I'm going to bring up right now is another cheat sheet page that it's good to have the notes. But essentially what the work effort is to convert that one-line diagram into equivalent MVAs. And then we're going to combine the MVAs almost like we combine impedances with one exception. Are you familiar with the term admittance? Y versus Z? It's the reciprocal of Z. Well, you know that when you combine impedances, you sum them together. When you combine admittances, you do, when you put them in series, you actually do the parallel calculation. Well, this MVA trick we're going to do is like admittances. We're going to be doing that paralleling trick. But you'll see what I'm talking about. But essentially, what you're going to do is every time you see a utility source, well, okay. Okay. The trick is you want to change every single load into an MVA. So you saw on that previous drawing there was a 0.9 ohms. We need to convert ohms into MVA. So what's that all about? Well, remember that the power, you're familiar with I squared R equals power, but you're also familiar with V squared divided by R, right? But we typically think of kilowatts, but it works for VA also. So what this is V squared over R, V squared over Z. So we're converting the resistance into an equivalent power. It's an apparent power. And then of course, MVA is just the MVA rule. Kilovolts times kiloamps times the square root of 3. So that's the rule, that's the trick, that's the shortcut. So how are we going to use the shortcut to actually calculate what the voltage is on any one of our buses? Well, there's our circuit again. So what we're going to say here is we're going to basically use the same thing we talked about yesterday. The only thing is that, remember, we had this impedance. This is an induction machine. We had this impedance. We said, well, you know, absent any other knowledge, we're going to say it's 25%. We don't care about that. This is nominal voltage. This is not short circuit. We're not putting a bus fault on here. This is just simply going to be nominal 100 kilovolt amperes, which is actually 0.1 MVA. So you'll see what I mean. When I convert this into, using the rules on the previous page, I converted, so 34.5 times 15 times the square root of 3 is 893 MVA. 5 MVA divided by 9% is 55.6. 3 MVA divided by 15% is 20. Here's my I squared R, my V squared divided by Z, so 4.16 squared divided by that is 19.2. 1 divided by 5.75 is 17.4. And then this is just 0.1 MVA. We don't care about the short circuit, it's just MVA. And there's our drawing. Now, I need to simplify this down because there's too many blocks. So I have two blocks in series. What do I do when I have two in series? Do I sum them together? Let me ask another question. Remember, this is MVA. Let's say that this is the short circuit capacity of that transformer. If this is the short circuit capacity of the transformer, and I put an infinite bus on it, that is the maximum amount of capacity I can get out of that transformer. So if I changed this number to 8 bazillion, this is still 55.6. That's the best I can get. So you sort of inherently know that if this is thing anything less than infinity, the combination of these two mean that this has to be less than 55.6. So in your head, you kind of know that you can't just sum them together. The number can't be bigger than 55.6. It's always going to have to be smaller than 55.6. And that's how you kind of have the memory trick, I guess. But here I'm paralleling sources. When I parallel source, I increase the available power. In that case, I'm going to sum them. So this is going to be the 1/1/1 rule. This is going to be the sum rule, the 1/1/1 rule. I mean, you know the other shortcut rule too, right? Is if you take these two numbers, you multiply them together and divide it by the sum of them. That's also 1/1/1. It's a shortcut way. But when you do that, here's what you get. That top source turns into 72.3 MVA. This turns into 9.1, and that, of course, stays at 1. Well, now I'm trying to find the voltage on 1. So what I want to do is I want to collapse these two together. So I need to, they're in series, so I have to do the 1/1/1. So let me ask a question. When I combine these two, is this number going to be, is the number going to be smaller than this, or greater than this, or smaller than this? What will the number be? If I have two sources in series, just as a check is what could the largest value be? 9.1 and 0.1. Maybe going back up here. I've got two sources in series, and it's not real obvious what this value is, but I'll tell you right now, the combination of this two right here was 52.3, because 52.3 plus 20 is equal to 72.3. So the combination of this two turned into 52.3. So the number that results from that is always going to be less than the smaller of the two numbers. Because it can never be more, you can't have more capacity than whatever the smaller of the two is. So what's this number going to be when I combine those two together? Is it going to be bigger or smaller than which number? Yeah. And it's going to be smaller than this. So it has to be, you did the math right, it's going to have to be smaller than 0.1. Another way of looking at it is, this is a generator. If this was infinite, if there was basically zero impedance, then it would be, best case, 0.1. So anyway, when we do that math, 0.099. Now, the question is, what is the voltage drop? It's a 4160 volt bus, which I don't particularly care. Remember, in the per unit system, I don't really too much care. The only reason I need to know that is when I was trying to convert the impedance of that cable into an equivalent MVA. But what is the voltage on that bus? Well, what it turns out to be is the ratio of the source to the load. So think of it this way. What if this was zero? There's no load on it whatsoever. You kind of inherently know that the voltage on the bus is exactly one per unit. It's 4160. As this gets bigger and bigger, you kind of inherently know that the voltage has to be going down, down, down. Well, how much? Well, it turns out it's nothing more complicated than just the ratio of those two. So if you take the load and divide it by the sum of the two, you come up with a value, and we take one minus that value, you come up with the retained voltage. So it turns out on this particular circuit with a 100 kVA load on a 5 MVA transformer with a 3 MVA generator running in parallel, it's basically the nominal voltage. You've got a pretty stiff source with a pretty small load, and that sort of makes sense. What about one step down? Remember, this is bus one. This is the 4160 volt bus. Voltage on bus two? Well, so now I'm not combining going this way, I'm combining going this way. So I'm going to combine those two sources. Is the source, what is this, the combined source is going to be greater or less than those numbers up there?
Less.
So it's going to have to be, we know it's going to be smaller than this 9.1. We don't know what it is, but it's going to be smaller. Turns out to be 8.1. Now, I do the same trick I had before. My source KVA, or MVA, dropped from, well, it was 72.3. It's now all the way down to 8.1. My load's still the same size. So you kind of inherently know that my load is a larger percentage of the total, so it's going to be dropping the voltage more. But let's see what the answer is. But we do the same thing. We do the ratio. So 0.1 divided by the sum of the two, and it's 1.2%. We take 1.2% away, and it's 98.78. Still, you know, not bad. I mean, again, it's a small load. But it's a motor, and motors have inrush. So one of the questions you might have is, when I start that motor, what am I going to see as my voltages? So the question is, well, now what do I do? Well, on the motor, they don't publish impedance, but they do publish what's called a KVA code, or a KVA locked rotor code. It'll be a letter of the alphabet, A, B, C, D, E, G, whatever. And that corresponds to a number that says that when the motor starts, this is how much greater the percentage of the inrush is going to be. So you would just take and Google the number, you know, if the manufacturer doesn't tell you what it is. So let's say in our example it was 6 times. It typically they give you a range, and let's say the top of the range was 6 times because we want to be conservative. So now, how do I change this math to say what would the voltage be on those buses when I start that motor? Well, you sort of know it's going to be lower. And the reason it's going to be lower is because my load is 6 times bigger. It went from a 100 kVA load to a 600 kVA load, 6 times. But we do the same math. It's not like we do a different calculation. So we simplify down those two in series, 0.56, 72.3. Ratio, 0.56, 0.077, 99.2, still not bad. In fact, if you look at what it was 99.86 before. When we do an inrush, it's only 99.2, so pretty good design right here. Well, let's check bus 2, because bus 2 is further down in the food chain. So same thing. We know that this source is going to drop from 72.3, combine those two, it drops down to 8.1, just like we did before. So now we're going to have the 8.1 and the 0.6. We do the ratio, and it dropped a lot. It's almost 7%, which again, you would sort of expect. It's further down, it's more impedance. But that's getting dangerously close to 10%. And 10% is the point at which pretty much all electronics, it's off the table. If you look at the specs for automation and coffee machines and things like that, it'll be nominal voltage plus or minus 10%. So anyway, this is just back of the envelope. I mean, we're not talking rigorous here, but it's just a technique that you can use to just give somebody some insight into what you would expect the voltage, the maximum voltage drop to be during an inrush event. Changing pages now. Power factor. We all know power factor. Power is volts times amps. And if they're perfectly aligned, it's just simply the multiplication of the two. So I've drawn a V and an I curve that actually overlap each other. And if you just take every point on the V and every point on the I and you multiply them together, you're essentially squaring it. Well, you know, 0 squared is 0. Where's my pointer doodle? 0 squared is 0 and 1 squared is 1. So you kind of know that the power is going to range from 0 to 1. And it follows this little curve right here. And but that's the unity power factor, that they're perfectly aligned. Now, as I start to do a little phase shift, which I always am going to do whenever I have energy storage in my system, all bets are off. Here's one where I have an 80% power factor. And all that means is that the ratio of kilowatts to total power is 0.8. Well, when I do that, you'll notice a couple things interesting happens. Here, as always, the peak power is when you have peak voltage, which is also peak current. But here you notice the peak power doesn't occur when you have peak voltage or peak current. It's when the intersection of the two. And you'll also notice something else, that the peak value is less than 1. Well, the reason is because the peak, you know, this times this is actually, you know, it's less than 1, so it drops down. So you have less power when you have a phase shift between the two sources. It's the same current, though. Notice the magnitude of my current. So I have to have the same, you know, I have to install the same size wire. You know, I'm not off the hook on that. I have to buy the same KVA transformer. I have to buy the same backup generator size. So I still have to buy the same capacity, but I haven't gotten the capacity, or I haven't, you know, I basically have wasted design. And of course, you know that they store and return the energy every half cycle. Okay, so ideally there's no watts. What Dan showed with the energy savers, you know why those energy savers save a little bit of energy? I mean, they don't save energy, they reduce current, but why does reducing current save energy? It's because when you have less current in the wire, you have less I squared R in the wire, and you have less power loss in the wire. So you do get a little bit of energy savings, but it's not the way that they present with, you know, 20-30% energy savings. In an ideal system, power factor correction does not save any power at all. And then, you know, you guys know these equations. KVA, KV times I times square root of 3, there's our little famous power factor triangle. Cosine is equal to kilowatts over KVA, which is the definition of power factor. This one you don't see as much. Sine of theta is equal to the ratio of kVAR over KVA. This becomes handy when you're trying to do power factor correction, because you want to know how big a capacitor do I put on there. And, well, you know theta, because you've been told the power factor. Well, you take the sine of theta, and that's the ratio, that tells you how much capacitance you need, because you already know what your MVA is. So you've just figured it out. So it's really pretty straightforward. You know this equation, KVA equals cosine of theta, because it's the same thing. And then KVA is equal to KV times I times the square root of 3. So really, KW is KV times I times square root of 3 times power factor, or cosine of theta. Looking at our equations here, here's 80% power factor. When you plug in 0.8 right here, and you do the inverse cosine of 0.8, it comes out to be 36.9 degrees. Okay? That's what 90% lagging looks like. So lagging means, you know, the voltage comes up, but then the current comes up later, and it's offset by this amount. Less lagging, voltage comes up, the current comes up a little bit later. But you can also have leading. Leading is where the current comes up before the voltage comes up, and that's, of course, capacitive. And that's when Dan was showing the example out there where he kept the filter turned on, but he shut off the load. This is going to be real important in data centers, because a lot of data centers produce harmonics, and so they put filters on the front end of the power supplies. Well, those filters are not switched. They're on all the time. So if you shut down the, they do this thing called virtualization, where they move the compute load around to different computers, and they will essentially unload the server. But the power supply is still on, because they kind of switch it on a moment's notice. Well, if I take the load off the power supply, the filter's still there. The power supply goes leading. And we've run into really interesting problems where you can't synchronize a generator to the system because the generator's voltage regulator doesn't like to feed a leading power factor load. Most of them are unity or lagging. And this is like, you know, you would never see this because when you're doing the testing, when you're doing the commissioning testing, it's always worst case, right? They're bringing in those big load banks and you're hooking them up and you're loading the system down and everything's, you know, tested. It works great during commissioning. And then 5 months later, when you have an actual event where you need to fire the generators up and you can't switch them and you're like, what's going on here? It's because your load went leading on you. And it's a dumb regulator. It should have been able to deal with this, but it's always expecting the current to follow. And when the current leads the voltage, the voltage regulator just can't handle that.
So what's the solution to that? What do you do?
Well, you can get a different regulator. You can also switch in inductive loads. But the best thing is to know from get-go. Just recognize that a lot of the stuff that we connect to our systems these days are electronic. And designers have recognized that they produce harmonics, so they're trying to put filters in them to kind of clean some of that up. Well, you know, you look at the leading power factor that results. It's like, I don't know if you've ever looked at the waveform, current waveform of we're going to, you know, LED lights and CFLs. That's a pretty nasty looking waveform because they're DC power supplies, you know. And DC power supplies, you know, are two pulse, they're single phase. So remember the rule Dan did out there, number of pulses plus or minus one. Well, a six pulse would be fifth and seventh harmonic. What is a two pulse? Well, it's the first and the third. Third harmonic is a triplet harmonic. Triplet harmonics are the ones that sum in the neutral. Well, that's not good because normally in a power system, you have your A, your B, your C, and I could have 5,000 amps, 5,000 amps, 5,000 amps, and I could have 0 amps in my neutral. So, you know, we size the neutral for the same size as the phase conductors, and we're good because 100% single phase load would be no more than 5,000 amps going out on an A phase, looping back 5,000 amps on the neutral. But not so when you have triplet harmonics. So all of our loads nowadays are going to this kind of electronics. They're all producing triplet harmonics, unless they have the filter. And now our neutrals, and we've been doing this for years. Remember, you've always oversized your neutral, a 2x neutral, because they now sum in the neutral. So it's a sticky wicket, as you might say. On the one hand, you want to put filters to get rid of those harmonics. On the other hand, you're going to cause leading power factors. So you make sure that your generator manufacturer, and oh, by the way, your UPS manufacturer, because some UPSs don't like leading power factor. You know, they won't feed a load that has a leading power factor. So just make sure that, you know, you got all those I's dotted and T's crossed. I drew this little picture here because it always confused me for some reason. You know, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but you know, I see the waveforms and is it leading or lagging? I couldn't figure out which it was. And then they would draw this phasor diagram and then it was like, well, okay, so if the voltage is this way, which way does the current go? Which, you know, so anyway, this is sort of the memory trick that I use. So draw an arbitrary voltage. I don't care which way it goes. 0 degrees is a good starting point. And this is an inductive system. So let's say that in our case, this thing is rotating counterclockwise. Completely arbitrary, but let's say that's what it is. Well, if that's the case, then at any point in time, my A phase rotates around. Well, then my B phase is going to be down here, and it's going to come up next, and C. So if I had ABC rotation, if this is C down here, then it would be CBA rotation. But that's what I've got. So where's my current vector? If it's an inductive system, this thing's rotating around, where's my current? Is my current going to be ahead of my voltage or behind my voltage? Yeah. Yeah, because it's lagging, as they say. So the the terminology in the industry is that if this is the rotation of the vectors, for any arbitrary line that I would draw in the sand, the voltage will hit first, the current will sit second. It's following, it's lagging. And that's for a single phase system. Of course, with a three phase system, you know, you put in the B phase and the C phase, and of course they have corresponding current vectors. And that looks really complicated. That's why on your drawings, it's like, what is he doing? So that's why I wanted to do the build up here. But that's it. That's it. So you can start doing sort of mind tricks and say, well, what if this was a capacitive system? You know, instead of having inductors, you know, the distance between my current voltage is decreased. In fact, if it was unity, the voltage and the current vectors would be on top of each other. Capacitive system, there's my current vector. Draw the rest of them, and you see what's going on. Couple of other rules of thumb here. In your consulting application guide, 35.0-11 is the cheat sheet that you'll use to size your capacitors. You've got all the math, but this math was then used to create those tables, and you know, it's just an easy way to, well, I say easy. The thing that you run into with motors is two-pole motors, four-pole motors, six-pole motors, eight-pole motors, so you got 3,600 RPM, you got 1,800 RPM, you got 1,200 RPM, you got 900 RPM. They all have different power factors. Typically, the slower the motor, the worse the power factor. So your cheat sheet has to ask you the question, well, what's your RPM of your motor? Because otherwise, you may end up undercompensating or overcompensating. How much current are you going to save if you put a capacitor in there? It's just a simple ratio. Take 100 minus 100 times the ratio of the old power factor divided by the new power factor. So, you know, if you just want to see how much you're going to reduce the capacity on your transformer, someone might say, I need 10% more on this transformer. Well, then you know how much capacitance you have to put in, how much power factor you have to reduce. The actual VARs is not going to be the nameplate VARs, because the actual VARs is a function of voltage. Remember, VARs is power. And power is equal to, either I squared times Z or V squared divided by Z. Well, Z is the reactance of the capacitor. It's constant. But the V is all over the place. So depending on what your V is, oh, and by the way, it's squared, V squared divided by Z. So you make a slight change in voltage, and you cause your VARs to do one of these numbers. So, but that's the equation. Nameplate VARs times the ratio of the voltages squared. The other thing is, when Dan was doing this yesterday, and remember he switched off all the drives and he left the filter on there, did you notice the voltage went up to 500 volts on the bus? Well, that's what happens when you overcompensate. So if you want to calculate what your voltage rise is going to be, you can just say the ratio of the total MVA of the capacitors, which is the kVAR, divided by the capacity, the short circuit capacity of your system. Find that ratio, and that's how much percent voltage rise you're going to see. Some more rules of thumb. kVAR is equal to kV times I, which is the, you know, just the rule of power. The capacitance, reactance of the capacitor is that equation, which the electrical engineers will remember. But that happens to now allow us to do some other things with it. With just those two little equations, I can say, well, gosh, I now can figure out if I have voltage is equal to current times the capacitance. So again, this number right here, I times this value right here, this is just Ohm's law, E equals IR, right? So voltage is equal to current times, in this case, reactance, but that's the same, that's Ohm's law. But we know that this value is equal to that, so I can plug that in there. Okay. Well, if I know that, I can solve for C. And now I can calculate what size capacitor I need based on voltage and somebody's up there doing the solar panels or something. So now I've got an equation that can do that. And or finally, I can calculate what the kVAR is based on the capacitance, my frequency, and my voltage. Fun with numbers. But sometimes somebody's going to say, I've got this 480-volt capacitor. I'm going to apply it on 460 volts. What's its effective capacitance? Well, you can use these equations and solve that. Except remember, that's it. You got to square the ratio of the voltage. It's not proportional to the voltage, just square the voltage. And so if you're changing taps, if you're changing anything like that, you're going to change the capacitance. Really makes it kind of complicated for us, but that's what happens. Something else that complicates it for us is, unfortunately, we shouldn't just apply a power factor correction capacitor anymore. It fixes utility penalties and reduces operating costs and capacity issues. These are all reasons why we use them. But I'm just going to draw this little picture here. Very common. You've got a utility source, you've got a transformer, and you've got a 480-volt bus, and you decided you're going to put power factor correction capacitors on there. Great. Unfortunately, one of the loads on there is a drive, a six-pulse drive. Now, what are the harmonics that a six-pulse drive can produce? 6 plus or minus 1 is 5 and 7. Keep those numbers in your head. Because there's an equation that says, if I put a capacitor on this system, there's going to be a resonance between that capacitance and that source impedance. What is that equation? Well, the well-known equation that says the harmonic number is equal, basically, the ratio, the square root of the ratio of the source fault MVA divided by the capacitor. Well, the fault MVA is equal to the source KVA divided by the percent impedance. If we assume that this is going to be an infinite source, then it's this number divided by this value divided by this value, and then take the square root. When we do that, what's the harmonic number? It's 7.07. Why might that be a problem? You can't answer that. This system right here is, I've got a drive, a 200 kVA drive, or UPS, and it's 1500 kVA transformer, and I put a 600 kVAR capacitor on there. When I did my little equation up there, it came up with 7.07. Why is 7.07 tell me that this design is going to be a failure? Drive produces that harmonic. That means this system is resonant at the seventh harmonic. If I inject a current into a resonant system, what happens to that current? It gets amplified. It gets magnified. That's what resonance is. It's the tuning fork. It has a certain frequency. I tap it, and there's all the frequencies in there, but the one that rings out is strongest is the resonant frequency. The resonant frequency of this one happens to be at 7.07, which is 420 hertz or whatever. That's not good, because a six pulse up front end is richly loaded with seventh harmonics. It's producing 420 hertz nights and weekends and twice on Sunday. So this is a failed design. Well, that's great, but and you'll get something that looks like that, which is not pretty. But think about it. Think about that equation. That equation says that the harmonic number is a function of the source MVA and the capacitance that I added to the system. Well, and also, ways of fixing this, I could not put a capacitor in there. I could put a filter in there, which the simplest filter is just a capacitor with an inductor in series with it. I could get an active filter, which I can tune it to whatever I want. That was that big thing, but you're paying hundreds of dollars a kVAR for that versus a few bucks for a filter. I could get rid of the harmonic source. What's one way I could get rid of the seventh harmonic? is a 12th pulse. Because what other harmonics are produced by a 12th pulse? 11th and 13th. Is there 7 in there anywhere? No. So this system is resonant. So you might do the math and say, we got a serious problem. We can go forward with this design, but you need to supply 12 pulse drives. Or you could provide 18 pulse drives. What's the harmonic that an 18 pulse drive, the lowest harmonic it produces? 17 to 19, right? So that's another option, although it costs more money. You could change the capacitor bank size. You know, all you need to do is kind of get out of that danger zone. You decided that you need 600 kVAR to move it into whatever power factor you want. Well, use 550, use 650. You know, just get out of there, move out of that zone. However, the other interesting thing is sometimes you use stepped capacitors. And why would you do that? Well, I'll give you a perfect example. Our headquarters building down in Pittsburgh, we have step capacitors because the motor load during the day is very different than the motor load at night. When the building is unoccupied, the HVAC system drops into kind of an unoccupied state, so all of that reactive load goes away. Well, if I have a fixed bank of capacitors on there, I start raising my voltage on my bus and I get the same problems that we talked about earlier. So we switch them. Well, if you're going to switch them, then you have to redo the calculations at every step. And if that wasn't enough, we have a backup generator back there. Remember that equation? Harmonic number is equal to the square root of the source short circuit MVA divided by the capacitance. Well, does the source MVA change if I switch from utility to generator? You betcha. Generators have extremely high impedance relative to utility. I mean, that subtransient reactance, that X double prime D that you see on the generator is, I mean, at a best case, 0.16, 0.18. That's a really big generator. You've paid extra for that. 0.2 is a common one. So you've got a transformer that has a 5% impedance. You've got a generator with a 20% impedance. You know, that's a problem. Because you've got to redo that calculation. Now the numerator of that, this equation that we showed earlier, that percent Z now jumped up by 4 times. If the percent Z increases, it makes the numerator smaller. If it makes the numerator smaller, what does it do to that harmonic number? It's coming down. Think about it. Because one of the tricks that you can do is you can say, well, maybe I can kind of like size my capacitor to kind of sneak out of that danger zone. Sounds like 7th to 11th, I've got kind of a safety zone maybe. Well, you know, you may do this calculation and then the number recalculates to 5. Well, you've sized the capacitor that you thought you were in the safety zone, but because you changed the source impedance and made it smaller, you've now slid the harmonic number down, the resonant point down, and now you're back in the danger zone. So, so anyway, just you know, fun with numbers. But here's the pictures. Did Dan show you? Did he switch the generator? Did he switch the impedance? And you saw, you know, you get something that looks like that. You know, what's really interesting is here's a low impedance source. The voltage is smooth. The current is really distorted. When you add source impedance, the voltage gets distorted, but the current actually smooths out. When you first think about that, because think about when you're putting line reactors on drives, you'll do this. You'll put a series impedance with a drive to smooth out the harmonics. What is that doing? Well, what it's doing is, remember, you can't instantaneously change current through an inductor. So this quick, you know, bang, bam, you can't do that through an inductor. What it'll do is it'll say, I'll sort of smooth that out, and it makes it look more sinusoidal. So that's a good thing. And what you don't really realize is on the load side of that inductor, the voltage is very, very distorted. But from a drive's point of view, it doesn't care. It's converting it to DC. You could feed it a square wave. It wouldn't really care. But when we are talking about this. We're talking about the inductance is up back at the source, and the source now is increasing the impedance. Well, now all of a sudden that really ugly waveform on the voltage is being distributed into our entire facility, and that's a problem. So anyway, it's kind of a downer, isn't it? giving you all these problems. These are just things. I mean, this is this kind of stuff that you, this is what you get paid for, right? I mean, if somebody could just open up a book and pick a piece of switchgear out of a catalog, you know, what do they need us for? So this is the kind of stuff that you want to make sure that your clients are aware of. And sometimes just even bringing this kind of thing up to them, they're going to say, I didn't hear anybody else talk about that. I maybe want to talk to these guys some more. So that's kind of why we're doing it. Obviously, you sort of can figure out the solutions. We've talked about them here, but in the short amount of time that we have, it's just more setting the stage. But that's it. I think, by the way, here's what the capacitor looks like if you don't follow these instructions. That's the inside of the capacitor. And normally, you do not want to see the inside of the capacitor. It's considered a bad thing. And also, since that's oil in there, you know that when it went, it was an associated burning fireball. So it's one thing, we talk about arc flash, and yeah, there's this fireball coming at you. That fire will stick to you and continue to burn. So, you know, some of the stuff that we kind of joke about, but this is, you want to make sure you're designed. The reason that thing blew up is because the higher harmonics, remember our equation for, the equation for the reactance of the capacitance, it was 1 over J 2 pi FC. F was in the denominator. As the frequency goes up, the capacitor reactance goes down. When the capacitor reactance goes down, the current goes up. So when I increase the frequency, my currents go up. The thing starts to overheat, and it just starts to get hotter and hotter, starts to puff, 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 boom, and then it blows up. So anyway, we do a lot of the forensic kind of stuff, and that was, I forgot who that was. I think it might have been I don't remember who it was. But anyway, so that's it.